are aware that we have Dr. Kevin Kaiserman with us this evening to lead this conversation regarding closed-loop system implementation at Diabetes Camp. And Kevin is a pediatric endocrinologist with Southern California Diabetes, and he's been with Camp Conrad Chinook for a number of years, serving on their board, on DECA's board. He's also, I think, a board member of the American Diabetes Association and JDRF boards in the Los Angeles area. He's got two children who are pretty much grown up now, a beautiful family, and he's a good friend and someone who's quite knowledgeable in this project. He was involved in a lot of the research activity and the development of the closed-loop system for Medtronic. Kevin, if you can add any additional information that you'd like for your introduction, and then start our conversation, please.
Thank you, Terry. Good evening, everyone, and glad you could join us. I think that introduction is perfectly fine. Thank you. I think it is worthwhile to just say that the purpose of the call tonight was actually a request from the last call that we had regarding technology adoption at camp, which we had prior to the beginning of this year's camp season, and people had wanted to have a follow-up call to discuss any issues that may have arisen over the summer, or certainly as we're starting to see more people adopting to new technologies, whether that be continuous glucose monitoring or combinations of insulin pump systems and continuous glucose monitoring, that we have a discussion about that to see where camps are, any issues that may have arisen over the summer, or questions regarding implementation for the coming summer as these technologies become more prevalent. I think it is incumbent upon me to mention that I am a clinical researcher as well as a consultant and speaker for Medtronic Diabetes. And with all that being said, just thought we would open it up by seeing if anyone wanted to share any experiences with any of these technologies over the summer, any issues that may have arisen, or any questions or concerns about these therapies going forward. Does anyone want to jump in? And if not, I'll just keep on going. But let me know if anyone wants to raise any issues from the summer, either positive or negative, or some concerns that may have arisen.
Now we're all going to talk.
And then if you guys would just introduce yourself and let us know where you're from, then we'll know who's speaking. Thank you.
Julie Garcia.
So who was jumping in and wanted to share something from the summer? Just introduce yourself and let us know what you wanted to share.
Sorry. Okay. This is Julie Garcia. I'm actually calling from the American Diabetes Association's Camp ASDA, which is held here in Arizona, in Prescott, Arizona, and I've been involved with the camp for 9 years.
Fantastic.
This is Taylor Glassman from Bearskin Meadow Camp. I just wanted to add, I'm glad that we're doing this chat. We just had a weekend retreat just this past weekend, and 20% of our participants were on the 670 system. Which is already a huge jump. We did have people on it over the summer, but just from the summer to just this past weekend, I think a ton more people have gotten on it, and so I think this is a really valuable conversation to be having, so thank you.
Excellent. So I think that was one of the things that, you know, we talked about prior to the summer, was that we expected to see some campers starting to use these systems, but we expected that utilization would increase as the system became more widely available. So I think, we want to maybe revisit some of the things we talked about earlier about these systems, but I certainly want to answer any questions if people have them, either about how these types of systems work or specific questions that may be specifically relevant for camp and the way we adopt these therapies at camp. So does anyone have anything that they wanted to raise either as a question or concern at the outset? Or would people just want me to give more of an overview of these systems and some of the issues that may occur in the camp setting?
Well, this is Robin from Camp Najetta, and we had several concerns about a closed-loop system. We only had one this summer, which was unexpected, and it was on a a child who was 8 and had no idea how to manage it, and we didn't have the proper training for it. It kept shutting on and off. So there were many issues that we were dealing with, and we're curious as to what type of training other camps have in regards to managing these systems in the camp setting, and the independence of the kids that go to camp and how independent they are managing these systems, and also basically how it works and why it kept shutting on and off of automatic mode into manual mode back and forth several times. So there were several issues that arose, and I was just going to kind of wait to see if somebody else brought up other issues or if you wanted to just go through with discussing the dynamics of it.
Okay. Does anyone else want to add something in or have respond to that?
Yeah, this is Dr. Karen Gilson with Tennessee Camp for Diabetic Children. We didn't have any on the closed loop this summer, but we had about 4 on DEXCOM. And I think we're going to have more on DEXCOM next summer. The big problem is monitoring them with limited Wi-Fi and how to follow them, you know, in the infirmary when they are in their cabins.
All right. So definitely separate issues there, but things that we can certainly address. And again, you know, each camp is going to develop their own, you know, level of comfort with different technologies and what works within their camp setting based on their capacity of technology, things like, you know, Wi-Fi availability, whether or not they're staffing in order to be able to, you know, be monitoring that in that way and how that's going to be handled. I think if we just take a step back and talk about how these technologies, they exist to try to make the management of diabetes easier and safer for people. I think you have to take them and realize that, you know, camps have been struggling to figure out how to adapt new technologies since the first diabetes camps, you know, now coming up on almost 100 years ago. So we're not pioneers in terms of adopting new technologies, but the technologies that we're seeing are different than our predecessors may have seen. But it's always an issue about how these new technologies may make the care of the child at camp safer. And I think that's what all these technologies have as their core principle. And, of course, how we learn to adopt them into our own camp settings is going to vary camp to camp. But I would hope that all camps are open to utilizing new technologies, as camp has often been a rich environment for people to see and utilize new technologies, for other campers to learn from their peers about what's out in the diabetes community. And often kids come home from camp and want to change their therapies based on things that they've learned about in the camp setting. So I think that's sort of the foundation on which we sort of build the rest of the discussion. But there will be individual challenges that each of these new technologies bring in terms of how we use them in the camp setting. And it's not going to necessarily be one system that's going to work across all diabetes camps within the country and even internationally. And I think that that's probably an important place to start. So with that being said, let me at least say a few things about hybrid closed-loop therapy, because that's what we're currently seeing coming into camp, and that's the current system, the hybrid closed-loop 670G system from Medtronic, currently FDA-approved for use in people with type 1 diabetes above the age of 14 years. That is a system that has a variable delivery of basal insulin every 5 minutes based on the sensor glucose, with a goal of trying to drive the sensor glucose to a target of 120 milligrams per deciliter. In the trials that have been published in the pivotal trial regarding this system, people were able to see more time spent in the target range with fewer highs and lows. Now, it doesn't eliminate all high and low blood sugars. They can still occur, but because the basal rate can vary, the overall percentage of time spent above and below target was reduced on both ends, both on the high and low end. Now, people still have to enter their carbohydrates before eating, just as they otherwise would have with standard pump therapy or with injections. They still take correction doses for high blood sugars off of finger stick measurements, but the calculated correction is done by the system itself. And unlike other pump therapies, you have to either choose to take the correction or not. There's no adjusting what that correction dose is. And so those are things that have to be considered in that camp setting. So I can say that, you know, at our local camp, we had several campers in multiple sessions that were using the system, all with very good success. I was present for some of the sessions, but not all. And so if I wasn't at the camp physically, if there were questions related to the system's use in campers, then people would just contact me on my cell if they had a question. So I wasn't physically present for all the camps where the system was being used, but I was available to other medical staff if they had questions regarding the system. Other than that, it's basically works in the same way that standard pump therapy does. The carb ratios are the same as they otherwise would be. The risk for highs and lows after eating is reduced because of the ability for the basal rate to vary in order to minimize the excursions high or low, but again, does not absolutely eliminate those. So if someone completely mismatches their bolus for food with the amount of food they actually consume, then they would be at greater risk for still having a high or low blood sugar following that. But I would point out, no greater risk than they would otherwise have if they weren't using the system. So having a single set basal rate or a series of preset basal rates does not in any way minimize that risk for having a high or low afterwards. Whatever the system adds or subtracts in terms of additional basal insulin would only mitigate that excursion of having a high or low. I think people are concerned that somehow the system is going to increase or, you know, increase the frequency of having high or low glucose values, and that has generally not been what's seen either in the trials that have been published or in the commercial use of these products. That's sort of an overview or introduction to what these systems do. Does that raise any questions for anyone?
I have a question, if I may. This is Danny Dolan from Camp Nakoma in West Virginia.
Yep.
So I'm contract for Medtronic, so I'm definitely familiar with the system. Our fear at camp, many of our camp healthcare providers like to run the kids at higher numbers, 180 or 200 at camp. And so with the target blood sugar being 120, the fear among many of the staff is that by having a target of 120, our kids who are normally sedentary are going to have a greater risk of lows.
There's a couple of ways that can be addressed. Let me address that in a couple of different ways. First of all, you are correct. There is a standard preset target of 120. However, you can set a temporary target at 150. That can be done in half-hour increments up to 12 hours at a time. So, for example, if you were concerned at the outset of camp, say when they come for that first evening, and you wanted to set the target a little bit higher to reduce their risk for having hypoglycemia, you could set the system to have a target of 150, and the algorithm would be shooting for 150 rather than 120. And that's done within that automated basal delivery. If your camp did not feel comfortable with using the automated basal delivery at all, you could actually use the pump in the standard setting, a regular standard setting with a manual mode with all the typical settings you would have for pump therapy, and turn on a feature called suspend before low. Suspend before low is, again, a system unlike the current system where you have to hit your low target. Say you had it set at 70, you'd have to hit that threshold in order to suspend your insulin delivery. Suspend before low would suspend if you're predicted to be down within 20 milligrams of your set limit within the next 30 minutes. So if you were dropping, you said that you wanted to have a limit at 70. If you got down below, if you were predicted to be below 90 in the next 30 minutes, the system could actually suspend the insulin delivery at that point. So the system could be used in multiple different ways. It's not locked in only on that 120 target. Again, you'd have the option of the 120 target, the 150 target, or using the system without the automated basal delivery, only with the feature of suspending insulin delivery if you're projected to go down within the next period of time. And that actually is automated in terms of suspension and resumption of the insulin. So that's actually a very nice feature in terms of if you're worried about low glucose values at camp, that's a feature that is unique to this system, does not exist on any other currently available systems in the U.S., that would allow you to have some reduction in risk for hypoglycemia without having that fully automated basal. Does that help to address those questions?
Yes, I'm wondering, since you utilized this at your camp last year, what was your experience with that?
We used it now at camp over a couple of summers. Our first exposure to it was actually the summer of 2016 with some people who were using the system up at camp in as part of a research trial. So we've had several campers over a couple of years now using the system, and you know, I would say that you're seeing what you would expect to see. It does not eliminate all high and low glucose values, but my personal experience would be that in no way would you be expecting to have a higher number of high or low glucose values. You're generally going to be seeing a reduction in both the frequency and the severity of those values because of the ability of the basal insulin to be varied.
Did you have trouble with the minimum delivery alarms?
You can have trouble with the minimum delivery alarm. Sometimes you're going to have that often when you are setting the targets higher. So, for example, if you're using a 150 target, you're going to have periods of time when the system may not be delivering insulin, as kids are often more active at camp or maybe not having the complete access to carbohydrates all the time that they have at home. And so you can have periods of time when you have minimal delivery. Minimal delivery on this system is if the system is delivering the minimal basal for 2.5 hours, and then another 90 minutes of what's called a safe basal or a pre-programmed minimal basal delivery during a safety window, so a period of 4 hours, then you would exit from the auto mode. And again, if you exit from auto mode, you're just going back to your manual pump settings that you would typically have. So again, the point being that this is a standard pump, no different than any other pump that we're already using at camp across camps all around the country. And our experience with using insulin pumps, this is the added benefit of the ability of things to vary. So, you know, people are concerned, well, what if I'm not in auto mode, you know, 100% of the time? Well, that's going to be what you would have if you're not using the system. But if you're in auto mode 80% of the time or 90% of the time, then that's a period of time that you potentially have additional safety that you might not otherwise have if you weren't using the system. And I don't think that we have to, be concerned about using the system at all because it might not be functional 100% of the time. Because if you're not using auto basal in the auto mode, you're basically using the pump as otherwise designed. So that's not any different than you'd be doing in camp generally.
Kevin, this is John Latimer from Camp Slo Harris. In your experience, the auto mode versus manual mode, because I can't remember when I got this, but I saw a document, I think, from AADE as far as, you know, when auto mode versus manual mode was to be used. And I guess there it was said that, hey, sometimes during the camp week, the manual mode should be used because the last, 2 to 6 days of blood sugars and data is going to be used for it to calculate basal rates and everything. Mm-hmm. So I guess what was your camper's experience or anybody else who used auto mode during the summer of their campers?
So the system looks back over your previous 2 to 6 days, and If you have a dramatically different use in insulin, the system will take time to catch up to that because it's using multiple days of data in order to determine how much insulin to be giving during any given day, update to every night at midnight based on the previous up to 6 days of total daily delivery of insulin. So, again, what one can do, if you're worried that that tamper is more likely to be low, you can start with that temporary target a little bit higher. Or if you're concerned about using the auto mode, you can use the system in the manual mode with the suspend before low feature on the sensor. And that doesn't give any extra insulin ever. It only suspends insulin delivery if you're at risk of going low. That alone is a fantastic feature, and people love that feature, both in clinical trials as well as in the commercial launch of the product. People really like that added safety of having the suspend before low. My personal experience is that people have enjoyed auto mode more and prefer to be in auto mode. And in the camp setting, we have tried to keep people in the auto mode as much as possible, rather than automatically reverting them to manual mode. But if you were having people that were exiting a lot for minimal delivery or for low glucose values, you could always decide that you want to put them into the manual mode with suspend before low turned on and have that benefit.
Dr. Kaiserman, this is Nurse Deanie from Bearskin.
Yep.
And just a comment on the 150 target. We did that with two of the kids over the summer and realized that it didn't work so well because it requested a blood sugar during the night while everyone was sleeping. And since that didn't get done, it kicked them into manual mode, which was okay, but they ended up higher in the morning, and we didn't understand it until we realized that blood sugar hadn't been done.
But it only asked for a blood sugar. It didn't ask for a blood sugar because you were using the temporary target. That's not the reason that it asked for a blood sugar. It asked for a blood sugar for some other reason.
Right, but it didn't happen. And so that was, one of the things that we don't necessarily pick up on all the alarms during the night. But the other thought for everyone is that when you're in auto mode and it kicks you into safe basal, it's usually because it just wants another blood sugar and you can get back into auto mode.
That's correct. That's what's required most of the time, and we'll put you directly back into the auto mode with a finger stick blood sugar. And that all has to do with safety. We can talk more about the parameters and how that works in the algorithm if people want to know. But I think that your points are excellent, which is exactly what I'm saying. Even if you exit to manual mode, that's no different than you would be doing if you were using manual mode from the outset. So there are going to be times in a camp setting where someone's going to revert to the manual mode on their pump. That's not going to be any different than if you weren't using the auto mode to begin with. But when they are in auto mode, you would have that additional benefit of either the added or reduced basal based on their sensor glucose. Does anyone else want to add a comment or question regarding 670?
Well, I know this is Marcia from Gales Creek, and we thought we were going to get away from having any 670s this year because all of our older kids come first. And so we figured by the time the 670 got onto the market, we would just have the second, third, fourth, fifth graders and wouldn't deal with it. But apparently there, of course, it sounds like somebody else had an 8-year-old being ordered off-label. So it is in younger kids off-label. Anything we need to be concerned about, or is it just the same with a younger kid as an older kid? It's just not FDA approved.
Well, I don't think we have the published data yet on the younger kids. Trials are occurring that are addressing younger kids, but the FDA approval is above the age of 14. With that being said, many of the things that we use in pediatrics are off-label, whether they be medications or other therapies. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that the general considerations that we're talking about would necessarily be different. But again, that's something that each individual camp will have to look at and decide how they want to proceed with those decisions about what they're willing to use or not use. But with that being said, you know, I would just point out that for many, many decades, we've often used therapies at camp that may or may not have been specifically FDA approved in that specific age group, but that's an individual decision for each camp to make.
Right. We were just caught off guard, I think. And I think the docs.
I would say, again, just generally, I think that this is a therapy that most every camp in the country is likely to see within the course of the next year.
Oh, we were expecting it next year.
And often in fairly large numbers. I think our colleagues from Bearskin just said that they had 20% of their campers at a recent session already on therapy. So, you know, I would not be surprised for people to see significant numbers of campers using this therapy. So I think, you know, the question is generally not if we should use this therapy or not, but how camps are going to adapt to this new therapy. How are they going to integrate this new therapy into their, you know, protocols and individual camp programs? And that's what I want to try to help answer for people if they have specific questions about how it works or different things that you can do to try to, you know, make the therapy work for you. Things like the temporary target or the ability to use the manual mode with suspend before low, just to give camps options about how to move forward with the therapy depending on what they're seeing going forward.
This is Kaylor from Bearskin. Can I add something that we definitely think is important about this system is that you can't see in the 670, you can't see the breakdown between the total basal insulin, because there's not really a basal anymore, versus the total insulin for carbs. So it's really important that before the child gets dropped off to you at camp, that the parent has somehow told you the average total daily insulin, because if the child's pump, let's say, breaks or for whatever reason, you know, completely turns off and you need to switch them over to shots, you need to be able to take approximately 40% of that total daily insulin and turn it into that basal Lantus, because otherwise you're not going to be able to, like in the other pumps, how you can scroll down and just see your basal.
It is actually available there as well. When they come, you can look at their pump. If you go to history and then summary, you can look at the last 7, 14, or 30 days of delivery. I usually look at the last 30 days because I'm trying to get the general overview of what they've been using in terms of their basal, but you can look at it in any context that you want, 7, 14, or 30, and it will tell you the total daily dose as well as the percentage of basal that they have been receiving over that period of time. And that is very helpful if you want at intake to get an idea of where that is, because the basal percentages can vary pretty dramatically with the way that the system is being utilized. The traditional 40 to 50% total dose from basal still holds pretty true, but there are certainly kids who are using in the 30s for their total percentage of basal for the day. So that's right available. You can check on when they check in. You could have a place to fill that in or have the parents fill that in for you before they come. You could ask them to put down what their average total daily dose for the previous 7 days was, as well as what their percentage was from basal. And that way you can go back and calculate their needs if there was a problem with their system. And I do that at every follow-up visit. I look at those numbers in case I need to recalculate their doses from that. So that's a very good point, and thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah, thanks.
Any other questions or comments about 670, or should we talk more about the issues around, you know, things like the Dexcom and Share?
Well, I did have, this is Robin from Camp Nageda, New Jersey. You had mentioned that the carb coverage needs to be done pre-meal. Is that a necessity? Because that's something that we don't have an option of to be able to do at our camp.
It's not required. It's certainly recommended. You know, we at our camp, we always pre-dose for food, and that certainly would be optimal. And I think you have better outcomes with these automated systems if you dose before they eat. You don't have to have the exact number, but doing some pre-dosing is helpful, and then you could always dose again if they decide to eat more. But generally speaking, it's helpful to do some pre-dosing. If you don't, what has the potential to happen is that as your sensor glucose is rising because you don't have any insulin on board for your food, then the basal rate is trying to ramp up to try to cover the food. It can't do that, but it would ramp up, and as your sensor number is going higher, then when you bolus later, all that insulin for the food comes in, and because the basal rate has been higher going into that dose, you can have some dropping out or hypoglycemia following that. So certainly best practices with the system is to try to do at least some amount of pre-bolusing.
Right.
So I'm just curious, do other camps on the call generally do their meal bolusing after meals or before meals?
It's after meals.
Bearskin is before, for sure.
Bearskin before, Camp Chinook before.
Yeah. Gales Creek before.
Camp
EI
Missouri before.
Camp Hamway before.
Tennessee Camp is after.
Okay.
Camp Nakoma, we do before for all the kids except the smallest ones, the 6 to 7-year-olds.
Okay.
And then I'm at Camp Take Charge or Brainy Camps, and we end up doing it after because we still have so many injections, and then we'll do before for the pumpers.
Okay, but this would be for a pumper, right, if we're talking about the hybrid closed loop, so you would do it before.
Oh, yeah.
It sounds like there's a mix, but quite a few camps do it before. I would certainly say if you're looking for having better outcomes using the automation of hybrid closed loop, I would encourage at least some amount of pre-bolusing. Again, it doesn't have to be the exact number of carbs that they have, but if you know they're going to have a minimum of 30 grams and you bolus that before, and they come back to you after and said, I ate 45 and bolus them again for 15, that is certainly fine and much better than waiting and bolusing the entire 45 after if you're using the hybrid closed loop system.
Okay.
Does that raise any additional questions or comments from anyone on the call?
What do you do if their intake carb is a lot less? That, let's say they thought they were going to like it, decided they didn't like the food and didn't eat it.
Yeah, so again, that would be true with any therapy, whether it be an injection or a current pump therapy. The only difference with hybrid closed loop is that basal insulin would likely be suspended as their sensor glucose was dropping, then their risk for going low would be reduced, but you can still go low if you over-bolus for your meal. As I told you earlier, low blood sugars are not eliminated, but if that kid came forward, obviously you would try to get them to make up some of the carbs that they had missed. If you didn't know about it and the kid just went about their standard activity at camp, the degree to which they would drop would hopefully be mitigated by the fact that their basal rate would be suspended, as opposed to current therapy where you wouldn't know that they hadn't eaten all their carbs and their basal will continue to be delivered and their risk for hypoglycemia would be increased. So all this system does is mitigate risk. It doesn't eliminate risk, but it mitigates risk by having the ability of that background insulin to be suspended or increased based on the fact that people routinely misjudge their carbohydrate intake by either taking too much or too little for their meals and snacks. Is that helpful?
Yeah.
This is Abby Hollander from Camp EDI in Missouri. I was wondering, what does the system do after a period of when the pump's disconnected for swimming or other activities?
So the sensor continues to collect all that information. So the sensor information is still there. It's generally recommended if you're off the pump for prolonged periods of time that you suspend delivery on the pump, because the algorithm is looking at the total amount of insulin that's actually delivered into the body. And so if you're disconnected for prolonged periods of time, if you're going to be swimming for a couple hours or anything where you're going to be off for a while, you just want to suspend when you disconnect them. So that's not counted as delivered insulin. When you get back and you reconnect, the system is going to pick up based on what the sensor information is showing, based on whether they're rising or falling and at what rate, and then the automated basal would resume. If you lose your sensor signal, then it would exit you from the auto mode after a safe basal period of 90 minutes. You came back to your system and you were exited from auto mode, you would just go into the pump. It will tell you exactly what's needed. Most of the time it's a finger stick glucose measurement to resume into the auto mode, and then the system would take over again, that automated basal delivery of insulin. Does that
okay,
help
thanks.
With that? Great. Any other issues or questions around 670G?
Yes, this is Robin again, Camp Najetta. How do you document insulin given?
How do you document the insulin given?
Yes.
In terms of the basal or in terms of the boluses?
Well, both. Well,
the boluses are given exactly the way you would otherwise give a bolus, either through entering grams of carbohydrate into the system or doing a finger stick measurement where a calculated correction dose would be presented to you on the screen to say it's recommending a correction dose of 2.6 units, and then you would either not accept that correction dose.
Okay.
So that's automatic. If you're looking for how much insulin has been delivered in terms of basal, it's not quite as easy to go in and figure out exactly the amount of basal, but it can be done. The total daily dose can be obtained for each day, and you can you can subtract out the boluses that have been given and know that the rest is from basal. You can look at the percentage of basal that's been delivered and calculate that as the basal. But if you want to look at what's been given every 5 minutes, it's a little bit more challenging to do, and most people don't go back and try to recalculate every 5 minutes of basal that's been delivered.
So there's no real record of what the basal is going to be set at.
There's not a set basal. I think that's you want to kind of get that concept out of your brain. There is no set. It's not like it's running at 0.9 for a couple hours,
right,
and then it runs. It's all over the place. It can go from 0 to 100% and everywhere in between. And it does. It's constantly adapting to the sensor numbers every 5 minutes. And there isn't really a simple, single preset number that you would go back and say, this is the basal that was delivered. It's actually, if you think about it, it just tries to address some of the variability in day-to-day management of diabetes that we're all familiar with. Differences in activity, in stress, in illness, in food absorption, insulin absorption, all these different things. Whereas before, with preset doses, if you don't have enough insulin, you go high, and if you have too much insulin, you go low. And all this system does is gives a little bit more variability in the insulin delivery to reduce variability in the glucose. That's the concept behind it. And I think that as people start using this more and have that experience, I think you'll find that that's exactly what the system does. It just tries to shift some of the variability from glucose to insulin delivery, and thereby having more time in target, fewer highs, fewer lows, and less extreme highs and lows, which I think ultimately will make people's management in any setting, camp or otherwise, make their management easier.
I have a question, Dr. Kaiserman. At Bearskin, we typically give like free carbs before bed or before activity, that kind of thing. But with this
yep.
new system, is that idea kind of gone, since then it would just ramp up?
Yeah. So
okay.
if you give a lot of free carbohydrates, you can actually have the opposite effect of what you're trying to achieve, because as you give free carbohydrates, the system is seeing a rise in sensor glucose and it's giving more insulin to try to bring it back down.
Right.
And thereby you can actually induce hypoglycemia where you're trying to actually avoid hypoglycemia. So I think it depends on where you are going into the activity. You know, if you're about to go, on a hike and your sensor glucose is 75, you can certainly give a little bit of carbohydrate because, again, the target is to get up to about 120. The difference is going to be the system will pick up that you're exercising over time, but if you start off at 75, the basal may already be shut off, but you have enough sort of forward momentum or residual insulin that you would still go low. So you may want to give them a little bit of carbohydrate, but what people are finding is they don't need to give nearly as much as they were giving before in terms of free carbs, and I wouldn't be giving free carbs if their central glucose said 140. You wouldn't be giving free carbohydrate because you'd just be raising them higher. So in that setting, what you can do is you could set the temporary target for that activity to 150 to reduce their risk for hypoglycemia and give them a little bit of carbohydrate to try to get them to bump up into that, you know, sort of in that low 100 range. And if that's the case, you won't be causing the system to be giving a lot of extra insulin because, again, if you set your target to 150, it won't be giving insulin if your central glucose is 100.
Right. So that's just something, I guess, like in terms of our protocol and things that our staff would need to be aware of, that it's going to be dramatically different for those on the 670 versus not, because...
That's right. So what people love about the system, many users, is not having to have so much free carb. Oftentimes people are exercising because they don't want to have a lot of extra calories, and we're like, you know, giving them 15 grams every, you know, 30 minutes, and they're like, you know, I went for a jog, but I had, you know, 60 grams worth of juice, and I felt like I wasn't making any progress.
Yeah.
In camp, it's a little different. It's not about calories as much as it is just keeping them safe. But you, again, raise really excellent points, and that is we have to understand how the algorithm is designed to work and what tools we can use to make this system work. But, again, a little bit of carbohydrate before an activity is still reasonable, and setting that target to 150 is another reasonable way to reduce risk for hypoglycemia. When you get more comfortable and find, you know, these kids are not really having hypoglycemia, I feel comfortable with the 120 target, then that may work perfectly well for you in that setting. I would look at what their central glucose is going into the activity, and I wouldn't just have it be, you know, just an automatic give, you know, 15 grams regardless, but really looking at where they are going into the activity.
Okay, thank you.
Dr. Kaiserman, this is Robin again from Camp Nageta.
Yeah.
You seem to be being able to make a lot of on-the-moment decisions based on individual campers and individual situations and individual blood sugars, which is great. But what's the level of the training of your staff at your camps to be able to manage this, not just on a daily basis, from meal to meal or activity to activity level, so they can start making these decisions?
Most of our staff have type 1 diabetes themselves. About 80% of our staff are former campers. And if they don't have type 1 diabetes, they often have a loved one, a sibling or parent or friend with type 1 diabetes. So, you know, people have a fairly good general knowledge of diabetes coming to camp. They may not have a lot of experience with 670G, but I will point out that whatever other therapy people are using, the whole concept behind being able to vary your basal delivery is all about increasing safety. There's really nothing about this system that generally is going to reduce your safety. The ability to reduce or increase basal insulin, all that does is help to mitigate extremes of high and low glucose values. Any of the issues that you raise about risk for hypoglycemia with exercise, or, you know, risk of hypoglycemia if you don't eat the right number of grams for what you told the, you know, the medical person that gave you your dose. That's all the system does is mitigate that risk for hypoglycemia, because as you are either dropping from exercise or dropping because you bolus too much for your food, the basal is backing off. Or let's say they had something on their finger when they did their finger sticking. You had a falsely elevated glucose and that correction dose was too high. In all those settings, the ability to reduce basal delivery only mitigates that risk for low. It doesn't increase that risk, does not eliminate the risk for low blood sugars, because you can still have a low. You could have enough active insulin, or your bolus may be great enough that you're still carried to a low glucose value. But I think it's scary. You think that maybe the system is sort of like, you know, is run amok and it's just, you know, randomly spitting out insulin, but it's really not. It's not a random delivery of insulin at all. It's insulin based on sensor glucose that's either designed to shut down delivery if you're dropping or increase delivery if you're rising with that goal of having that target at either 120 or 150. I personally believe that all of you who are on this call, as you get more comfortable with this, and if we have a follow-up call again next summer, I think you'll just have a huge number of people chiming in about how much easier it was to manage people and how much less risk they have for highs and lows at camp. But everything requires a learning curve and a trust in the system. I had the same experience when I first used the system in research, my nurse and I sitting by the bedside watching to see if the doses were going to cause the kids to be too low. That was our biggest concern, especially overnight. If they recommended a correction and we gave it, we couldn't go back to sleep, because not because we weren't allowed to, but because we were worried about the kids going low and we wanted to watch. So we took turns sitting by the bedside and watching what happened. And we became very comfortable with the way the algorithm was designed. Again, it does not eliminate all hypoglycemia, but in the pivotal trial that's been published, the mean A1C in that trial, again, it was adolescents and adults, so 14 to 75, but the mean A1C at the end of the 3 months on the system was 6.9%, and there was not a single episode of severe hypoglycemia, which is really important when you look at historical studies like diabetes control and complications trial, where you got to a similar end A1C, although a little bit higher, just above 7%, but there was a lot of severe hypoglycemia. You didn't see any in that pivotal trial. It's not to say that it's not possible. You could still have a severe event. But as you're dropping, you're not pumping additional basal insulin in on top of that, so you reduce that risk of having a more severe low. If you look at publications about when lows occurred, and I can speak to this personally because one of them happened at our diabetes camp with somebody on a sensor, and my colleague Dr. Buckingham collected these anecdotal cases of when severe hypoglycemia occurred. Did it occur early in the night or late in the night? Was it with a rapidly lowering glucose or typically after more prolonged hypoglycemia? And generally, in at least this publication and these handful of cases, and I contributed one of those cases from our camp, people had had more prolonged hypoglycemia prior to that severe event, and that's where the ability to reduce or eliminate basal delivery can really help to reduce that risk for that severe event. You can still have one if you completely overdose for food or exercise or whatever other situation, but particularly overnight, where a lot of those events occur, it's going to generally be safer if your basal rate can be suspended.
Yes, I understand the safety aspect of it and how it mitigates. My concern is the nurses that are working at my camp are mostly school nurses. They have basic knowledge of diabetes. Most of them don't know anything about pumps, unless the 670G or a closed loop. Do I just tell them to ignore it?
No. Are they allowed to be on other pumps other than 670?
Well, yes, and so, we do an education piece with that, and those nurses get overwhelmed just with basic pump knowledge. But you
don't have to give them more than basic pump knowledge. The whole idea here is that the system is automated, so they're not going in and making these moment-to-moment decisions. They're not doing temporary basal rates up and down all the time because, you know, they're trying to mitigate for an activity. The system is doing that in an automated way. All you're really doing, if somebody is on this system, is you're entering their carbohydrates, hopefully before or after their meal, however you're doing it, and you're giving a correction off of a finger stick if it's recommended by the system. But in between times, you're not adjusting the basal rates overnight because the system is adjusting them for you in an automated way. If a patient, a camper, is having a lot of exits from the system, you could always put them back into the manual mode of the pump. But for those campers who are just doing great and out running around having a good time, that's one less camper you have to worry about because the system is hopefully mitigating their risk for you. I mean, how often do we go around at midnight and some kid has a higher low that was completely unexpected based on what they ate at bedtime or what their sugars were or what we thought they were going to be. I've been doing this for 25 years. We can't predict who's going to be high and low overnight. And if you look at the data from these systems, what you find is that no two nights are the same. And the idea that one basal rate, no matter what we set at camp, is going to eliminate all high or low glucose values overnight, it doesn't make any sense. What this system does is it allows for that day-to-day variability that exists in all of our lives and helps to reduce that risk. So, you know, I would love to go into the cabins at night and have fewer kids that are just randomly high or low that I wasn't expecting that I'm now managing with either a correction dose for a high or glucose for lows. And, you know, that happens to us every night at camp. If I had fewer of those, we'd all get to bed sooner and it would be a much easier night. But I definitely understand your concern about it. And if you're concerned about it, start with manual mode with suspend before low. And I think that alone is already a feature that's going to be very helpful. And then you can let families know that you'll still use the sensor with suspend before low and mitigate the risk for lows. And then as you get more comfortable, you can integrate the automated basal. And I don't think that any school nurse has to know anything more than you would otherwise teach them about insulin pump therapy. I don't think there's anything more complicated about the system.
This is Lydia at Lions Camp in Southern California. Yep. I think the system is awesome. What you have described, I think, makes the life easier. Still, you have to have the precaution, but what I'm hearing, it is awesome, the system. And hopefully, as the technology improves, we could have the sensitivity even better adjusted. However, what we have, this new system closed loop, sounds really good.
I appreciate that comment. I did want to say something about Dexcom. I know it came up earlier about the share capability and numbers being, you know, transmitted. And it's a very hard thing. You talk about sort of burden on medical staff. So it is very hard to expect any camp staff to be able to address multiple campers having numbers, you know, sending over every 5 minutes and, you know, being able to respond to every one of those potential alerts and alarms, you know, in real time, as there can be very many of those. With automated basal delivery, what you're doing is having the system actually address that for you. You're not having to run out to the cabin and do, you know, give more glucose or do temporary things up or down. Generally speaking, I think the alerts that are most helpful in camp, regardless of which system you're using, are either the high or low alert, not all the predictive alerts and, you know, rate of change alerts and predictive alerts, because that is going to exponentially increase the number of alerts that you have to respond to. If you talk about people using systems, it's the number one reason why people stop using sensor systems is because there are so many alerts and alarms. As you get to automated delivery, you're not responding to all those alerts and alarms because the system is doing it for you, but you still have your high and low alerts. So, you know, I think just as a general rule, if you want to look at that for your camp, but being able to respond to every number every 5 minutes is very challenging and not necessarily healthy for anyone, including the parents, to be able to, you know, have that constant intervention.
Thank you.
So are there any other questions? I know it's almost 5, and it sounds like there's still a lot of interest in this. This is the second one we've done. I certainly appreciate everybody joining, but I want to be respectful of people's time. Does anyone else have any questions or comments as we come up close to the end of the hour? And I'm happy to stay on for a few more minutes if people want to stay on, but I also want to be respectful of people who want to be off by, 5 o'clock Pacific time. Anyone else have any questions or closing comments?
This is Marcia from Gales Creek, and we were just wondering about any of the alarms, highs, lows, or whatever, during the night, and just making sure that our counselors hear them and respond, and what if they don't, and if the pump is in the sleeping bag underneath them.
Yeah, it's very hard. being able to hear and respond to alarms has been an issue with these systems from the outset. I think alarms and things have gotten better, but they're not, people don't universally wake up to these alarms regardless of how loud they are. Some of them sound like, fire sirens, and sometimes people sleep through those too. So, I mean, all we can do is the best job we can do. Again, seeing these therapies as added ability and not seeing them as things that, things happen with diabetes. Not everything is predictable. We can't eliminate all risk. People at camp, they trip over the logs. They break bones. I mean, things happen. This is an environment that is, there's not a bubble. These campers are out hopefully having a great time and enjoying their experience. So I don't think that you can make an expectation that every single high or low glucose value is going to be eliminated. I just don't think that is a reasonable expectation for staff or campers or parents to have. I often get calls after, camp, and they say, my kid had high blood sugars at camp. And I say, yeah, that happens. They have diabetes. If they eat more food than they bolus for, they're going to have a high glucose. If they, if they don't take their correction, if they don't change their pump site, there's a lot of reasons why people might have high blood sugars. Parents cannot have an expectation, and we should not set the expectation at all that all high and low glucose values are eliminated. So, I think that has to be said with these systems. It would be true for parents as well. Often when a parent calls me and says that their kid's, glucose was high, I ask them, what their A1C is at home. And they say, oh, their A1C is 10%. Well, camp is a great place, and there's a lot of magic at camp, but it is not a place where you eliminate all high and low glucose values. And I think it's really important that when you get challenged on that, if a parent says, can you promise me that every single high and low glucose alarm is going to be responded to immediately, the answer is no, I can't promise that. We will do our best, as we have since our camp opened. We've been at camp, our camp's been running for 60 years. We do our best. And I think we've done a pretty good job. Actually, we have, I think, better outcomes now, certainly, than we had 10 and 20 years ago. But that doesn't mean we never have any severe events happen at camp. People can still have DKA, primarily from not changing their pump site and having staff not follow up on that. That's the number one issue that you typically see around highs. And again, lows are not completely eliminated, but we certainly do our best. And I think if you look at the number of incidents of severe hypoglycemia at camps today, it's much less than it was when I started in the camp setting over 20 years ago, which I think is great. We should all should be very proud of that. But you cannot give the expectation to parents that every single alarm is necessarily going to be, we do our best to respond to every alarm in real time that we possibly can, and that's the best we can promise. If they don't want to send their kid to camp, that's their choice.
Dr. Kaiserman,
yep.
This is Nurse Jeannie from Bearskin.
Yep.
What we found really helped out with overnight is to have the kids put their pumps under their pillow rather than tucked inside their body.
That's an excellent observation and also very helpful. And again, there's different reasons for alarms. If they're in auto mode, it might be an alarm for exiting auto mode. And again, they're going to generally be safer if they stay in auto mode. And I think those are really helpful. And again, we respond to a lot of alarms. I mean, I'm sure we all have heard lots of alarms at camp. And occasionally there's going to be alarms that we don't hear and respond to. But we're going to, I'm certainly going to do our best. And, I think that's what all of us on this call, bring, is that, we volunteer our time to try to help these kids have the best possible experience. I think camp still provides an amazing life experience for people living with type 1 diabetes, and we should continue to hold camps and not see these therapies as reasons not to do it. But, we live in an environment where people are always looking for ways to criticize what we do. But, if ultimately people only want to have a perfect setting where their kid is never going to have a high or low glucose value, I would generally suggest to you that that is not going to be a good candidate for coming to camp.
I have one quick question. This is Karen Harriman, and I feel like I'm in the basics compared to all this other wonderful technology. But I was just curious for policies with like the DEX or the continuous glucose sensors. Do most camps say that we don't allow telephones as far as getting their glucose values to them? Because oftentimes the parents are following this during the camp, and then we get calls from the parents. Have most camps said, no, you can't do that, you have to use the receiver? I'm just curious.
This is Gail's Creek.
That's generally
that's
our approach at Camp Chinook. We try to disconnect the parent from their camp numbers because that's very disruptive. And by the time the parent has called the camp, the situation has almost universally been addressed already. So it just becomes more of a nuisance. But I will tell you, a lot of the kids love the fact that their parents are not bugging them every 5 minutes about their numbers. And one of the reasons about camp is to give the parents a respite from the diabetes care and to give the kids a chance to have a camp experience. And so my personal opinion is to definitely either use the receiver or, some other system. For us, it's pretty easy because we generally say we don't have adequate coverage to be able to be transmitting that information. So.
Okay.
At Tennessee Camp for Diabetic Children, we do the same thing. They can either use the receiver or one of the new iPod touches, but cell phones are not allowed.
Okay, good. Thank you.
We actually did the opposite this year. We allowed our kids and their parents to make that decision. We did ask that those parents don't call the kids, that they call our camp director, and they are all given his cell phone number. We only have about 100 children for 5 days or so. This was the first year that we really saw kids using the Dexcom, and so we just decided to go for it and see how it worked. It was about half and half, kids that used the receiver only. Most of our teenagers opted to use the receiver only, not a big surprise. But a lot of our younger children did have their phones. We handled it on a case-by-case basis. If we saw that the kid was abusing that privilege to have their phone, then we would contact the parent and tell them, we had to take their phone away and you can't follow their numbers anymore. But it really worked out, and I think that our parents were really thrilled with that. They thought that that was a good use of the technology. They thought that it was good customer service on our part, that we were answering calls from them when they were concerned. It didn't happen all that often, to be honest, that parents were calling us.
I think you raised an excellent point.
The technology rather than a shunning of the technology, because this is the world that we're living in, and this is what our kids have to learn how to manage.
In individualizing therapy, camp by camp, and what works for each camp is great. That's why, we can share what we do. No one is suggesting that the camps have to follow one path or another. And, I think it's great that you guys have opted to do it that way. I think that's very nice. I do think it's more useful in the younger kids than in the older kids, who generally don't want their parents to be seeing their numbers every 5 minutes. And they're actually very grateful. As a matter of fact, when people switch to the automated system, one of the things that teenagers and young adults often say is that they feel the best they've ever felt. They feel better control, but they enjoy being liberated from being sometimes hounded by their parents around about their numbers. And it shouldn't be underestimated. Mm-hmm. Some of these kids really have some parents that are, contacting them constantly throughout the day about their numbers. And they often are kids who are doing great, and they're still being constantly contacted. So just something to keep in mind.
Thank you.
So
thank you, Dr. Kaiserman, so much.
Absolutely, my pleasure. So if anyone wants to stay on, please do and ask me additional questions. Otherwise, I just want to thank all of you for spending your afternoon with me and wish you all a happy holiday season. And we'll talk again before next camp season.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Dr. Kaiserman, I want to thank you for being with us this evening and sharing this information. I want to say that
for those who are may hear this, if you received an email from me in the last couple of days, it was about potential topics for our next camping conference. Some of those topics that are not put on the schedule could become potential webinar topics or campfire chat topics or roundtable discussions. And I'd love to hear from you regarding any ideas you got for that, including telephones and use of that, CGM's implementation at camp, pump protocols, or other things that you may have in mind. Again, Kevin, thank you, and I'll stick around for a couple minutes with you should other people have any additional questions.
Thank you very much.
Anyone staying on other than Terry and I that has questions?
I do. This is Erin Callahan. I'm with the American Diabetes Association out of our Illinois office. You've heard some really great information and addressed a lot of questions and concerns that certainly I and my fellow camp directors have. But we, a lot of us don't have the luxury of having the camp staff that you do, where they're either people with type 1 who've been living with it, who are familiar with the technology, or have come up through the camp program and know about it. We do have, obviously, licensed professionals. But do you or the folks at Medtronic, or is there going to be an intention to create, like, you know, a cheat sheet or a 101 or something that can be shared with incoming med staff that really only need to know this for a week out of the year and then keep up with it for various other experiences with kids?
I think that's a good question. I'm not aware of anything specifically, but, you know, I think a lot of, you know, obviously new things are being developed all the time, new resources and materials. Definitely will, you know, I'll give that some thought and try to discuss it more. There's actually going to be a camp conference through the American Diabetes Association that we're having in a couple of weeks, and we'll certainly revisit this issue in greater detail as we get to that meeting as well. Again, I think people see this as being additional things that you need to know on top of basic pump therapy, and I would say that generally it's not. The main issue here is that if you're not in the auto mode, it's standard pump therapy. So if you're in the auto mode, the system is just doing what it does in the background. So I don't think that people need to have a lot more detail than that. It's actually
right.
Pretty easy.
Yeah, I understand that it is a pretty intuitive system, and it's, you know, it's sort of self-serving, right?
Right?
But as we all know, change is hard, and so when we introduce new things and say, "Well, this is what we're doing now," we would prefer to be better prepared with a good response.
Absolutely, it's an excellent point, and you know, let me see, you know, where things are going, and I'm not even sure who all is going to be at this meeting in a couple weeks, but I'm hoping that whoever that group is, we can try to, you know, make things easier for everyone. It's all about camping and trying to, you know, look at technologies again in the camp setting and how do we incorporate these new technologies in a way that is easiest for everyone to adopt but also provides the greatest general safety for people in the camp setting. And I think the key point is that this is just added safety as opposed to what's already there. I think people are seeing this as potentially somehow a more dangerous system. I personally have not seen that in terms of its adoption. I see it either being similar or better. I don't really see it in any way being in any way worse or greater risk for having lows.
Of course. Well, I'm hoping to be at the conference myself, so I look forward to meeting you there. Thanks so much for your time.
I look forward to meeting you in person. That would be lovely.
Absolutely. Take care.
Hi, Dr. Kaiserman. This is Nurse Jackie Johnson from Camp Najeda and Conrad Chinnick before that.
Hey, Nurse Jackie.
Hi, how are you? I was just wondering where you set your high and low parameters for the Dexcom. We had tried 55 and 350, and we got about a 25 to 30% false alarm rate, and I was wondering what you guys did.
Yeah, I mean, the issue always with setting alerts is getting the true alerts versus the false alerts, and the wider out that you set them, generally the greater number of true alerts that you're going to get, and the closer in that you set them, the higher the number of the false alerts that you're going to get. So,
right.
You know, that's the challenge. Most people are setting the alert typically in the range of about 60 for the low alert. If you're trying to have, you know, a greater number of true alerts, you don't want to set it too low. And typically with the automated system, we actually set it at 70 generally, because you need to have some time to react. If you do, you know, if you're getting the alert, you want to have some window of opportunity to respond. And the high alert is really, there's often a difference between what people do clinically and what parents may want. They may want settings as low as 200 or 220, 250. In the CAMP setting, you do want to set it higher to eliminate those false alerts. So most people are using something in the range of 250 to 300. If you're using 350 and you're still getting some false alerts, I don't think you can set it too much further, because the further out you get, you start losing actually some of the real alerts, and that ends up actually minimizing the effectiveness of the system for you. Clinically, in my practice, I'm usually using 70 for a low alert and 250 for a high alert.
Right. Okay. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Any other questions?
I do have another question. How have you found if a child is very low activity at home and the algorithm for the 670G is based on the previous 6 days, and then they get to camp and they're high activity? How do you find that? Do you find that they drop a lot, or what have you found at your camps?
Well, they would be at risk of dropping more if you go from a completely sedentary existence to a more active existence. You are going to run the risk of having more lows. If you know somebody fits that category, you might be better off to start with the manual mode with suspend before low. If you find that you're reducing your dose over the first few days of camp and that they're having a lot of lows, as you do that, the system will learn from that, and you could potentially go into auto mode, you know, a couple days into the camp, or 2, 3, 4 days into the camp, depending on how long your sessions are. We often have kids coming to camp for, you know, 12 days straight. So that's not a single session, but they're back-to-back sessions where kids will attend both. So I think, you know, if you have that exact scenario of a kid who's really sedentary who becomes much more active at camp, would have a greater risk of having some low blood sugars. I mean, that's going to be true whether you're using the auto mode or the standard manual settings, either way. You can reduce your doses. You can reduce your doses for meals. You can reduce your correction doses. You can reduce your basal rates. As you're delivering less total daily dose, the system would learn from that. But again, if we're talking about, you know, a modest change, the system does pretty well with mild to moderate changes. If you're talking about a really severe, dramatic change, your risk is going to be greater.
Okay.
But with general changes in activity, it's not a big difference. For the vast majority of your campers, it's going to be fine. For extreme cases, you might do better using the manual mode with suspend before low.
Okay.
Any other questions or comments?
I don't know if anybody else is on the phone.
I think Terry's still here.
I'm still here. Well, Kevin, thank you so much, and I appreciate everyone being a part of the conversation. Y'all have a good evening.
All right, thanks you guys. Have a good night.
Good night. Okay.
Kevin, it's Mark. Bye. I just wanted to say hi and thank you. I was with Terry tonight.
Oh, very nice. Yeah. Always good to hear your voice.
Yes, and I look forward to seeing you at the conference.
I certainly hope so.
All right. Take care.
Take care.